Okay, I think we can get started. Boker Tov, everybody. It's welcome to class 118 in our ongoing series on the Siddur. I imagine we'll take this week and next week to finish the third bracha, you know, after the Shema, before the one after. And then hopefully we'll start in a couple of weeks on Shmon Esrei. That should keep us going for a while, please God. Okay, Purim Katan Sameach, everybody. Today, of course, is the 14th of Adar Aleph. As we mentioned a couple of weeks ago on Rosh Chodesh, really Adar Aleph is the real Adar. The reason we celebrate Purim afterward is in the second Adar, because the Gemara says we should celebrate Purim the first Adar. They should really be Purim. And we would have, because whenever you have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, do it right away. It's Adar. Why shouldn't we read the Megillah? But the Gemara says you want to have Purim and Pesach next to each other for reasons maybe we'll discuss another time, but they're the opposites, of course. Lismach Gula L'Gula. We're going to talk about today or next week, Lismach Gula L'Tfilah. That's actually what I call the class today, from redemption to prayer. So we have a very important halakha that you have to go straight from Ga'al Yisrael to Shmon Esrim, from Gula to Tfilah, so much so that the Shulchan Aruch rules that you're not allowed to answer Amen. I'm sure in many of your shuls, the chazan speaks, he says Baruch Atah Hashem, and then he mumbles, or you can't hear him say Ga'al Yisrael. Well, the Ramat disagrees whether you can, but even answering Amen might be a problem at the bracha of Ga'al Yisrael. So you have to have Geula to Tfilah. So the Gemara says you have to have Geula to Geula. The Geula of Purim and the Geula of Pesach have to be next to each other. We don't want that extra month break. So therefore, we do Purim in the second Adar. But really, what the Gemara is saying, we should do it, of course, in the first Adar. And of course, those two Geulot are the opposite of each other. You know, the Geula of Pesach was all God. The Geula of Purim is all man. But, you know, we can talk about that another time. And I'm sure, you know, people might be aware throughout Jewish history, you don't see that so much anymore, but throughout Jewish history, communities and people celebrated what they called, I think they call it a Purim Katan, when miracles happen, miracles, or great events happen in communities. So throughout history, people would observe that day as a Purim Katan, as a special day. Like Purim is sort of represents the Jew in exile. See, the template. Purim is really the story as the template. That's why there's no historical dating. Like you read the Megillah, you don't know when you are, but you don't know who Achashverosh is. It's some story that could take place at any time, which is exactly the point of the story. The story is the precarious nature of the Jew in the exile. So therefore, they had when events happened, they had like their own minor Purim. Anyway, so that's it. Today and tomorrow, Purim Katan, please God, there should be HaChodesh Asher Nafach Me'eva L'Yontif. All the things we say in the Megillah should come true today. We need a Purim Gadol today, not just a Purim Katan. Okay, so I want to pick up. We spoke last week. I don't know if I forget how we got into it last week, but somebody just mentioned that. I mentioned, of course, I was in Washington Heights, and I davened at Breuer. So I mentioned that many of the minhagim they do are slightly different. So the first thing, I was there on Friday night, and thank God the choir sang this week, the chaz and the choir. I found it very, you know, beautiful and a change of pace. And so I mentioned last week they don't say Aleinu, that in Breuer's they don't say Aleinu between Mincha and Kabbal Shabbos. That's a European custom because they say Aleinu when you leave shul. They don't mark together. Aleinu's not part of Mincha. Aleinu is part of the end of the when you leave shul. As a matter of fact, I didn't realize my son-in-law and I were talking on Yom Kippur. You notice we don't say Aleinu at Musaf. Now, the truth of the matter, that doesn't make any sense anymore. The reason they don't say Aleinu, right, Musaf, the chazan ends, it's, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, everybody wants their break already. So, the chazan says, Kaddish Shalem, that's it, no Aleinu. And why? Because the original minhag is they used to have musaf and mincha. They used to have the break between mincha and ne'ilah. Like they would daven everything. Okay, ne'ilah, you got to daven towards the end of the day. So since mincha followed immediately on musaf, they didn't say aleinu. But that's, I don't, does anybody have a shul? I told my son, he said that's how he had it in his shul. I said, I never heard of such that you have the break after mincha. Does anybody ever seen that practice?
Hello, Rabbi. Okay. Hi, Rabbi Gershom Katz here in Forest Hills. For many years, I davened at Ahavas Chesed in Brooklyn with Rabbi Tzvi Bashnan. And before we left for the break, we did say Aleinu. See, the only place I've seen it done.
Okay, so I that's not what I was asking, but good. Thank you for that. Right, so if we're leaving shul for 2 hours, the break, or depending on where you're up and how long the break is, but you're at Eina Chinama, you should say Aleinu. The reason I was asking...
Yeah, Jay, I davened in a shul where they took a break after Mincha.
That's what I'm saying, right. So very good. So I never heard of such a minute. I've never, over my life, I've been probably at least 10 different places on Yom Kippur and Yeshiva, New York, whatever, all over the place. I've never seen that happen, but that is interesting. But that's why. That's why we don't say Aleinu, because they used to have a Mincha and Musaf together. Now, what happened last...
Yeah, but we said, when we took the break after Mincha, we said Aleinu afterwards.
Right, after, correct, you'd say Aleinu. You
said Aleinu.
Shul, yeah. Correct, 100%. In other words, the last tefillah you have when you leave shul, you say Aleinu. But we don't say Aleinu after Shacharit on Shabbos morning. Like we all do this practice.
Because you continue into Musaf.
Correct, so the question is, why do we do it in Mincha Maariv? In other words, it's so, like, we all understand it, but every shul, almost every shul you go to, when they done Mincha Maariv together, they say, look, both. So probably this happened because most shuls didn't used to do that. They probably used to done Mincha at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and Maariv at night. They didn't do Mincha Maariv together. So they kept the Aleinu. But as you see, the way we do it on Shabbos, which nobody, you know, we always done it all together. So Aleinu never made it into Shacharit and didn't make it into Musaf of Yom Kippur. But last week I'm at Breuer's and they're saying Aleinu. I just said last Friday morning, they don't say Aleinu Breuer's. So I walked over to one of the people. I said, what's going on here? I thought the Minhag and Breuer's is they don't say Aleinu. So the guy says, no, they say Tehillim now. Because of what's going on in Israel, they say Tehillim, which they did. The Rav got up and said Tehillim, a few prakim of Tehillim before Mark. So Sama, that's interesting. I still don't really fully get why that considered a total break, but they consider that saying of Tehillim, like we're separating Mincha and Maariv, and therefore they taka said Aleinu after Mincha last week. So you see, you can never trust anything I say.
Also, if the rabbi like gives a Dvar Torah between Mincha and Maariv, that would also probably qualify as enough of a break.
Right. So, okay. But no. Normally, and the last two times I was there, which was I don't think I'd ever been there on a Friday night till like last year. And I'd been there once in years. I didn't stay for Shabbos that often, but I think I davened once at Breuer's on Shabbos morning. Then I never went back again. But when I was 20 years old, well, I had a different, it was different. Now on the nights. But it was so that they had. So they had that on Friday night. So I wasn't planning to go on Shabbos morning. I went over to the chazan. I said, I like your davening very much. Thank you, Yeshua Koach. So he says, you can come back in the morning. So I said, is the choir singing? He said, yes. I said, oh, okay. So I decided to come back in the morning. So two strange things happened. I don't know if anybody's interested, but, who mentioned before. So I walk in and, so I noticed something very interesting. There were two guys not wearing a tallis. So, the Breuer's minhag is that you have to wear a tallis after your bar mitzvah. They don't fall from this Ashkenazic stuff. You wait till you get married. So I actually watched the gabbai go over to the guy and hand him a tallis, and the guy didn't put it on. When I was there, 40 years ago, so I put on a tallis, but he didn't put it on. When they have 50 men in shul instead of 500, so it's a different story. They didn't argue too much. I guess they mellowed a little bit, but they gave me an aliyah. They're very nice. And then they walked over to me before landing. They gave me a black hat. They said, do you mind putting on the black hat for the aliyah? So what am I going to do? Of course, that's the minhag ha'makom. So I believe, I don't know what chata'ay ani maskir hayom. I don't know what word to use, but, I think this is the first time in my life I ever wore a black hat. I mean, maybe I tried one on Purim or something, but I never actually wore a black hat for davening. I wish somebody was there to take a picture. I know it was on Shabbos, but still that would have been, a picture to show. I don't know what it looked like exactly, how well it fit, but I put on the hat, had the aliyah, and after that, I took it on. I also did something else. Breuer's doesn't use the Erev in Washington Heights. There is an Erev in Washington Heights that, all the people I hang out with all use it. And but in Breuer's, there's a little sign that they don't use the Erev. So what am I going to do? I have my talus bag and everything. So I did like what, you know, the yeshiva people do. So I put my talus over my jacket and wore my coat and walked into shul. I didn't feel it was right to, you know, to walk into shul holding a talus bag if they say they don't carry here. I have to follow them. And if I don't like it, go daven in another shul. So I had stuff in my pocket. I wasn't so frum, but okay, that nobody knows necessarily. Although I, you know, people were friendly. Maybe they did know, but to walk in public holding a talus bag, that I didn't do. So whatever, I walked my talus under my, my coat. Very, very nice. But then, I pointed out really an interesting thing that Rav Schachter told us years ago. And I think it's very true. I then went to, what's the other shul called there?
Mount Sinai.
That's right. Where my son, my daughter doesn't want to daven at Breuer's because she has a little baby. So she's not going to walk in the shul with the baby. So they daven, anyways, they daven on Shabbos morning at Mount Sinai. So walking Mount Sinai, everybody carries, of course. It's very important. The same way you shouldn't walk into Breuer's carrying, I don't think you should walk into Mount Sinai not carrying. In other words, you always have to follow the minhagim of the place. Right. You should never be frummer than the rabbi. And, so Rav Schachter gave us, I remember in Shir many years ago, he gave us the example of the rabbi doesn't stand for Kriya Satorah. That's not his custom. It's inappropriate for you to stand. You know, there is a minhag Rav Soloveitchik developed. I explained the beautiful minhag, the Maram of Rutenberg, 13th century. I think he's the first one who quotes it, if I'm not mistaken, that you should stand, or you should, whatever, you can stand. There's an idea to stand for Kriya Satorah. Most people sit when they you have to stand. And Rav Soloveitchik developed the idea that when you stand for Kriya Satorah, it's a reenactment of Mamad Har Sinai. You're like we stand at the Aseret HaDibrot, which some felt you shouldn't stand, but our custom, we all stand. The Rambam felt you shouldn't stand, but that's, I think, everybody here probably doesn't know where they do stand. Because what are we doing? We're reenacting Mamad Har Sinai. So the Rav developed that even further, that every week when you stand for Kriya Satorah, it's like a mini reenactment of Mount Sinai. When you sit for Kriya Satorah, It's Talmud Torah. So that's what Kriya Satorah is. Everybody should know the Torah. It's public learning Torah. That's why we read the Torah. And I said, Baruch Hashem, the most important rabbinic law ever instituted was Kriya Satorah. Can you imagine if we didn't have Kriya Satorah? When's the last time people here, don't raise your hand, you open up a Sefer Yoshua, Shmuel, Shoftim, nobody would open up a Chumash. Tetzaveh, nobody would ever look at Parsha Tetzaveh unless some Meir Shapiro came along with a Tanakh Yomi, which they have, it doesn't work. No, who would ever look at these parshiyot? We only learn the Chumash. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I think it's really true. The only reason 98% of people learn the Chumash is because every week we have a parshiyot HaShavua. So, you know, we hear it in Shul with the rabbi talked about it, etc. So it's the most brilliant takana the rabbis ever made. To have Kriyat HaTorah every week, and originally it was a 3-year cycle, and now, of course, all around the world, it's a 1-year cycle. So that Kriyat HaTorah is Limud HaTorah. It's the idea of learning Torah, and so we sit. So there are people who stand. You go to any shul, there are people who stand. So I remember Rav Schachter talking. I said it's so important, it's so true. If the rabbi doesn't stand. If he's 85 years old and he used to stand for 50 years and now he's too old, okay, that's a different story. But he's, you know, he's healthy. And Baruch Hashem, it's not his custom to stand. That's okay. So you shouldn't stand. You're showing up the rabbi. You want to stand, go to a shul where other people stand. By the way, if you go to a Sephardic shul, where they follow the Rambam and it's the Aseret HaDibrot, you also can't stand. Everybody sits. You're not allowed to stand. So Minhag America, Isha Yesher Bein Avyasa, everybody does what they want. But it's not really right. I think there is, we believe in freedom of religion and everybody do their own thing, but within reason. And I think if there's to do something that makes you look more religious, quote unquote, than I don't think you really are, but you know, you look more religious. You pretend to be more religious than the rabbi. That's inappropriate. Just, so that's why, I have to wear my talus, over my suit when I go into Boris and then have to carry my talus when I walk into Mount Sinai. I don't know. Anyways, yes, Yocheved, you want to ask something? I think you wanted to ask something. Okay. Anyways, all right.
Sorry. Yes, I was on mute. Sorry about that. Oh. So what you just mentioned that you should not walk into a shul that uses the Erev not carrying.
I mean, you don't have to mamish carry, but if you walk in like it's obvious that you're not caring. Like you walk in on this and when it's 90 degrees in the summer in New York City and hot and humid, and you walk into shul wearing your talis, that I think is inappropriate. If it's a shul where the rav paskin, you can carry.
Meaning you're saying that in the law, then what are you saying exactly? You should make sure to leave your talis in that shul before Shabbos.
No, you shouldn't. If you really don't carry. You're invited to your first cousin's bar mitzvah. And the bar mitzvah, it's a modern shul. You daven in the yeshiva minyan. And knew your first cousin making a bar mitzvah. Rav Schechter always used to tell us, it's more important to go to the simchas of your non-religious relatives. It's a beautiful thing. He said, your first cousin's religious wedding has 500 people. They have too many people at the wedding. Anyways, it's okay if you miss the wedding. But when your non-religious wedding, where a cousin gets married, it's really important you go because they want to show, he's so religious, he won't come to my wedding. No, it's very important to be Makar, to show that we're family. And so what, you know, he gave that, you know what he was talking about? When your first cousin gets married or your brother-in-law, whatever, gets married on the 8th of Tishrei, the 8th of Iyar, the middle of Svira. You're not allowed to get married in the middle of Surah, that you're not allowed. There's a minach not to get married. I heard a shir once in my life, twice in my life from Rabbi Vajji Yosef. And she went to hear him one Sunday, who was in Sphira. So he was talking about how difficult this minach, what do you mean don't get married in Sphira? Who ever heard of such thing? Getting married is like the most important mitzvah in the Torah. Like the first proof. What do you mean? You get married, you know, they used to give lashes to people. You're married at 18. What do you mean you're in Sphira, you're going to push it off? So he thought maybe it's okay. You know, he was questioning this sort of minach we have of the Shulchan Aruch. But okay, you have a minach. People get married. They plan their wedding 3 months in advance, 6 months in advance, a year in advance, some people. So, okay, so don't plan it in the 3 weeks of, between Rosh Chodesh Iyar or whatever and Lag BaOmer, whatever minhag you want to hold. So, but the Shulchan Aruch says if somebody gets married in the time where the custom is not to get married, you don't punish them. It's like a weak minhag not to get married. But it's really, he's doing a great mitzvah, even in Sfira. So the said, you don't punish him. So Rav Schechter, I think quoting Rav Moshe Feinstein, if I'm not mistaken, but maybe I am, maybe it was just on his own. He said that en konsito means you don't show up to the wedding. And what do you mean? He's not religious. I'm not going to go to that wedding. He's getting married. You can't. No, the Shulchan Aruch said, you don't punish him. You have to go to the wedding. And that he's not religious, even more important. Obviously, today, somebody gets married, the 8th of Iyar is not so religious, obviously. That's, you know, today, nobody will get married then. So, of course, she's going to win. So that happened to me. I had a cousin who got married in the middle of Sphira, and I went to the wedding. Of course, yeah. Right, I'm sorry.
That's a minhag. Carrying is not a minhag. That's
right. Halacha. So what I'm saying, so you're saying you're not to be obvious about it. Right, correct. Right. So I don't think it's appropriate that when everybody in the shul and the Rav is the makshir of the Erev, you know, he's the one, even if he's not the Rav, a makshir of the Erev, but you know what I mean? Everybody's caring. You walk in with 90 degrees with your talus over the head. No, I'm not saying you have to carry. No, that I'm not saying you have to do, but don't make it obvious. That's sort of yuhara. It's connected, you know, this broad concept. You're not allowed to show off on his foot. You know, Rav Avadi Yosef said you shouldn't wear your tzitzis out. Who are you, a big knacker? Wear your tzitzis out. We don't show off on mitzvot. You do it quietly. Tzniut. That's ne'lachadim elokecha. So you're so from, you don't get beseder. You don't want to read every Erev relies on leniencies. Do what you want. That's okay. But when you go to a shul where everybody carries, don't walk into that shul with your talis over. Maybe, you have to be, so no, I
guess it depends on.
I know I'm crazy. I know nobody thinks like this. What can I tell you? That's, maybe that's why you come to the shir. I don't know. But that's the way I think. And, you know, Rav Shep, I go ring Rav Shep and all this stuff, right? Yeah. People, I don't know how well people know Rav Shep. You know, he has a reputation. He's not exactly like a flaming liberal modern Orthodox rabbi. You know, like there are lots of things Rav Shep there. I don't agree with a lot of the things he said. I learned tremendous amount in Shir for 4 years. I gained a tremendous amount, but I'm not a chassid. The Lithuanian. I don't have to agree with everything, but many things said were so beautiful and so insightful. And this is, I think, such a beautiful idea. The same way you don't carry, it's not right to carry when you walk into Breuer's. It's not right to show off. I don't carry when you walk into the modern young Israel shul. But yeah, it's basic respect. I agree. And the fact that I have to talk about this for 5 minutes, I totally agree with you. That's a very good point. Yes, this is basic respect. When in Rome, do like the Romans. You know, that's Hakol Kamin Hakamedina. I don't know who said it first, the Romans or we. But when you learn Mishnayos in Bava Metzia, like every other Mishnah, I think they're in the Gemara. Hakol Kamin Hakamedina, right? Whatever the minhag is, you have to follow. That's you follow. So you have questions. How far can you break your practice because you're following the minhag? As a matter of fact, according to the Rambam, there is no such thing. This, I remember also Rav Shakta quoted Rav Soloveitchik. The Rambam doesn't know of a notion that you have a family minhag. There's no such thing. You have a minhag. There's only minhag of communities, right? Minhagim is in the fourth parak of Psakim. That's the basis of minhagim. And the Mishnah says, if you go from one place to another place, you have to follow the strictures of both places. You have to follow the minhag hamakom, the minhag where you came from, where you went from, unless you're moving. It's a whole, that's the whole question. 2 days yontif, 1 day yontif. That's the whole issue. What do you do when, you know, somebody lives here is in Israel for yontif? But there is a concept. Al yishaneh adam mifnei hamachloket. That's how the Mishnah ends. And there's different ways to interpret that phrase, but the basic way to interpret that phrase, whatever, even though you should do this minag, that minag, the most important thing is not to create a machloket. That's how the Mishnah ends. Al yishane adam. Don't do something different. Mifnei hamachloket. It causes machloket. Now, it could be there's certain communities. There's certain communities where they encourage everybody to do their own thing. Okay? So I think in that shul, it would be okay. Half the people walk in like this. You have to get the feel for the shul. But I think if the rabbi is lenient in a certain issue for you to publicly, and publicly is you stand up for Kriya Sator, that's very public. And the rabbi is sitting. Who are you? Who a big knucker? Sit down. You don't like it? Go to another shul. You know, okay. All right. Do I make any sense? Anybody else want to argue with me? I don't mean argue with me, but, I think these are important things. And, this is Derech Eretz Kadma the Torah. You know, this is the basic things that I think we live in a society. Everybody, you know, America, you know, we were very influenced by America, you know, our individualism. And that individualism has transferred over into our religious practice. And everybody does whatever they want. I mean, it is true. We've lost Breuers is one of Breuers and the Hasidim are really the only people who keep, we don't say piyutim. I asked them after shul, they had a few other things they did on Shem's morning. But by the way, the chazen daven both suket izimra and shachrit. Oh, here's the other thing. I flipped out. They didn't sing Kel Adon at all. Like the chazen just said, you know, and then the next thing the chazan says, Tiferet Gulas Rafim Vopan. I asked somebody, is there somebody I can speak to after shul? I want to learn about all, you know, these minhagim. So I asked the guy, so what's going on Kel Adon? Says the minhag in Breuers in Frankfurt. That's not Breuers in Frankfurt. The minhag was that in the summer, in the winter, you don't sing Kel Adon, only in the summer because people have to get home. It's a very short afternoon. So, you can't sing Kel Adon. That may add a minute and a half to, you know, yekas. That might add a minute and a half to the length of our davening. So they don't sing. I was like, oh, it's like wild. So, what's Pshat summer and winter? So Pshat is from Shabbos Hagadol to Shabbos Shuva. That is, so I don't know. What about when now we go into daylight saving time and 2 weeks, that's not good enough. They're not going to sing Kel Adon either. I'm sure they won't, but they won't take into account that Shabbos, you know, I just find it so interesting that they, you know, and also, of course, the other thing which I've mentioned, of course, nobody puts their talus over their head in Breuers. Only the rabbis allowed to put their talus over their head. There's also another one of these Yuhara things. He'd be a big knacker, put his talus over his head, you know. They wear black hats. So it's interesting. You come, most of the people, I wasn't the only one not wearing a hat, but I was one of the very few. But people wear black hats, but they don't put their talus over their head, which is interesting. That's the minhag. I in Frankfurt, only Shimshon Raphael Hirsch put the talus over his head. That's, for Rabbanim, not for, so the person told me, I said, what's with the talis? I said, you follow the minhag, like from, you know, he said, from Frankfurt, he said, yeah, Rabbanim and Dayanim, the Dayan can also. And then the person said to me, it's very interesting. He said, when Rav Shachter davens here, he puts his talis over the head too. Like they consider him, you know, on the status that he's allowed to put his talis over his head. So I find these are very interesting things. You know, when you go to different shuls, it's very nice to see.
What about Nutzach, Ashkenaz, and Svard?
I was
you
in Frankfurt.
Let's say you personally daven Svard, and you go to a shul that daven Ashkenaz.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll do just, I don't want to, you know, I'm off topic. I hope, you know, I don't do what I say I'm going to do, but okay. We were in Frankfurt a number of years ago, one of our Torah Motion trips to Germany. So it's amazing. I think if you haven't visited, I know what Germany is associated with, of course, but Germany is the country that has most owned up to the Holocaust. Believe me, they're the best country to go to in Europe. They're way better. And the Holocaust is everywhere, and there's so much to see, not just Rashi, Tosfot, and all the Rishonim, modern Jewish history. Anyways, so Germany, I was in Frankfurt. In Frankfurt, you know, the center of Hirschian Orthodoxy, Torah Derkatz, and they daven Nusach Svard. I said, we got a firebomb, Yeshua. What did they daven Nusach Svard in Frankfurt? They're davening Nusach Svard, a chutzpah. I was so upset. I really was. I said, how in the world can they daven Nusach Svard in Frankfurt? No, what today, everybody, what can I tell you? What do you do when you're Nusach Svard? They're different approaches. The Rav Moshe Feinstein approach is you daven your own Nusach, except when it's things that can only be said in public. So in Kedusha, you say Keter. I have this problem. I daven Nusach Ashkenaz and I daven in a Nusach Svard shul. So Kedusha, you would say Keter, you know, that we say at Musaf, but all the rest you can do on your own. What Rav Moshe goes so far, he's a real stickler on this. Like, let's say at Shochenat. So I'm not like Rav Moshe. I don't follow this. Rav Moshe, you know, Bifi Yisharim, Tita Lal. So the Sfarim say what? Bifi Yisharim, Tita Ramam, and the Ashkenazim say Tita Lal. You know, we change it. So, you know, the Chazan gets up, Shochenat, Marom, Bekado Hashemo, and everybody says Shochenat, Marom, and then, you know, people say out loud, Bifi Yisharim, Tita Lal. So you can't say the Tita Lal out loud if the guy next to you, the Nusach is Tiparach. That I'm not so makbid on, but I don't yell it out loud. But he said anything, because that's not you're saying it in public. You can't do anything that might detract from the communal. He was a big stickler of Moshe. And I mean, you follow the minhag. We mentioned last week his unbelievable tshuva, and it's also connected to this idea. We said in a different context. Somebody asked Rav Moshe, can he donate to the Erev? Rav Moshe says the Erev of Manhattan is no good. He was big machmir in Erevin. Rav Moshe said the Erev is no good, and this guy doesn't carry. And he's davening in a shul where they do carry. And so I don't know what he did with the talis, that I don't know. But they're having a fundraising campaign, and he felt the whole shul is having a fundraising campaign for the Erev. The Erev, Rav is machshir the Erev, he should contribute. But he didn't know if he could contribute. It's filled with Shabbos, you know, you're not allowed to carry. And Rav Moshe says, of course you can contribute. Rav Moshe said the Erev is no good. You cannot carry. But of course, if your rabbi says, well, I'm not the only rabbi in town. There are other rabbis who say the Erev is good. You daven in the shul. The rabbi says it's good. Give money. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The respect you have for, we don't have that today. Because somebody quotes the rabbi in Israel, you know, Rav Al Yashiv says this and Rav this and that. It's very nice, but that's not how halakha works. And, you know, just be, you, there's so many factors that come in when you paskin the shela. I'll give you like a frum example, Rav Schechter once said. I remember he said this, but it can work non-frum and frum, if you know what I mean. I'll explain. So he said, like, for example, you know, he's, Rav Schechter, as I'm sure many of you know, he's not a big fan of woman Megillah reading and woman Hakafot. That's not his thing. So I remember he said once in Shir, it could be, I'll be the halachas of Megillah and Esther, a woman can read the Megillah, even for a man. I mean, that's the simple shot, that a woman can read Megillah. That's not done today. We have woman for woman, but the simple reading of the Mishnah, if not for the Bahag in the 9th century, came up with some chiddush, very hard to understand, that a woman can't read on behalf of the man. The Mishnah is very clear. Women and men are equally obligated. The same way a woman can say kiddush for a man, etc., and many other things, Megillah Esther too. But okay. But he says, it could be, I'll be Hilchot Megillah, a woman can read. But we can't look at the Shiloh only from Hilchot Megillah, from Hilchot Kavod Beit HaKnesset, and Hilchot this, and Hilchot that, and Minhagim. We don't do it. In other words, you can never look at a question just on its legal, technical merit. A great posek takes into account many factors, and that's why we have a Mara de Atra, the idea that the local rabbi, we today have totally gone away from this, and I think it's not good. We've totally gone away from the local rabbi today is like, nobody pays attention. When people get married, they fly in their Rosh Yeshiva from Israel. You know, I'm talking the modern Orthodox world. They know the rabbi for being their parents' rabbi for 40 years and they fly in. He was 1 year in Yeshiva in Israel. They spend $2,000. They give him a ticket. And I can tell you, I've been to weddings. I've seen it with my own eyes where these people come in from Israel. They don't know how to do a wedding. They're not trained. They forgot the ksuva. They forgot this. They don't know what they're doing because that's not what they do. The rabbi does the wedding. So whatever, we've totally taken away the authority and respect, I'll say, for the local Rav. And you don't have to be Rav Moshe Feinstein. The Rav has to know when he has to ask Rav Moshe Feinstein, okay, ask whatever, Rav Asher Weiss, Rav Schechter, whoever, Rav Rimon, whoever he wants to ask his shilas to. But the local Rav, who just, you know, a normal guy, he doesn't know Shas backwards. He can paskin most shilas. He's not paskining. He's telling you, it says in this in the Aruch HaShulchan, Rav Moshe Zetshuva, you don't need to ask every shilas. It's a waste of their time. It's not right. You only go up. Your GP or your, that's what they call that in the States, your doctor, the GP does all the base stuff. He knows when he has to send you to a specialist or not. So we've totally gone away from that. And the rabbi has no authority because the kids learn in yeshiva, modern Orthodox kids, and they come back. Oh, we did this in yeshiva. Who cares? I don't care what you did in yeshiva. This is what we do in our shul. But it's not right. It's not right. We have to follow the rabbi, and that's the practice you follow, and you don't have to, you know, worry about everything. So that's why it's marked, because every community is different. And in certain community, because there's so many factors that go in, and the Rav knows the community best. What should you do for a bat mitzvah? Don't ask Rav Asher Weiss. I don't mean to pick on him. What you should do in the young Israel of, you know, Oshkosh for the bat mitzvah. Because you have to know, are the people in young Israel, are they religious? Are they not religious? You have to know who they are to know what's the proper response. Is it good for the girl to give the Dvar Torah before laning and shul, after davening? There are 50 different things. But that's up for the local rabbi to decide. That's not up for some posek to decide who doesn't know your community, who doesn't know your shul. But we've totally gone away from that. Okay, can we get back to Shema? Any comments? I hope nobody...
I have one question.
Uh-oh, I'm worried, but okay.
Just to tell me. Does Breuer omit Kael Adon altogether? Or just...
No. They say it. They say it, but without singing it. In other words, like you say, Hameir Laretz, Hakol Yaducha. In other words, he just says the first. I didn't know what was going on. I kind of missed it. I think he went straight. I don't even think he said the last line of Kael Adon. He went straight to like Tiparach or whatever he say afterwards. He was at Kulam Ovim, Kulam Burim, Kulam Burim. I said, what happened to Kael Adon? So I know, like in the Frum circles, you know, they do it responsibly. So they told me in Breuer's, they used to do it responsibly. Now, responsibly in Breuer's mean you only say either other line. Like Kabbalah Shabbos in Breuer's, you only say half of Kabbalah Shabbos. The Chazan says line one, you Lechuna Rana, you answer line two, the Kadma Panap Toda. You know, and it's very quick. It's actually very quick. And it's sort of in its tune, and they go back, and then the choir at Lechadodi, the choir comes up for Lechadodi and Mizmor Shir and whatever. So, so apparently they used to do Kael Adon like that also. The Chazan said one paragraph and the Kal said the next. In yeshivas, what they do is they sing it and then I can't stand it. It ruins all the song, but nunu. They sing it, you know what they do in the yeshiva minyanim. The Chazan sings it, but then you have to pause. So the Kal can say, and then you have to pause again. Like you can't sing it straight. In the modern shuls, you sing it straight. So he said now in Breuer's, the people like it. They sing it straight, but not to go in the summer and see what tunes they use for Kael Adon. But it was kind of interesting. The first time I davened there in Shabbos since I was a student at YU, the one time I davened there. So anyways, interesting. Okay.
All right, so Rabbi Kelman, one last comment. Next time you go, you have to go down the block and daven in Dumbrov if it still exists. Because that's
where?
Dumbrov.
I don't know what that is. I'm sorry.
It's the Hasidic shul, the next corner, because that's where I davened growing up, because I grew up in Washington Heights. So.
Oh, you grew up in the Heights. Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Very nice. Okay.
Well, I went to Breuer's, but because of, you know, our background.
And then I went after shul, the guy who was, you know, I was talking to about Alter Minhagim, so he took me downstairs to see the school and their picture of Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, and, you know, Karim Derech Eretz, and, you know, it's, they have a school there, but listen, it's a much diminished community. I mean, I think there are people there. He told me they opened up a Breuer's Minyan in Lakewood. I mean, I haven't been to Lakewood since 1975. The last time I was in Lakewood, my first cousin got married. That wasn't a non-firm wedding. My first cousin got married in Lakewood in 1975. It's the last time I've been to Lakewood. I have to go, really. I should go visit. That's a wedding. I've had no reason to go to Lakewood. But he told me there's a Breuer's Min, and I was much younger and different and everything, but different. But he told me there's a Breuer's Min, a Breuer's Minyan in Lakewood. They just went, but he doesn't think they have a choir. He imagines the choir might not go over so well in Lakewood. But I think it's beautiful. Maybe you don't like it every week. I don't know that I've done it every week. But I sang in a choir. I grew up in a shul with a chazen and a choir. I grew up at 3.5 hour davening, okay? Three and a quarter hours every Shabbos. 8:45, they never finished before 12. And the chazen, two bar mitzvah, my father's shul, and it's a big shul, it's a traditional conservative shul, very traditional, the old style, they don't really have this anymore, but there was, you know, the chazen, the choir, explanations, bar mitzvah boys, it was a long davening, and whatever. Today, people don't tolerate. Breuer's, they finished, they davened quickly, with the chazen, the choir, and everything, 2 hours and 7 minutes, maybe, under 2.25 hours, which I thought was, anyways, interesting. Okay. Emmet, so we were talking last week. Okay, any other comments? And then we can,
Does Breuer say Aleinu between Mincha Maariv on a weekday?
I assume not. I haven't davened there. I'm assuming they don't. I know when I first saw this when I was in Europe after yeshiva in Israel. I was thinking it was in Amsterdam, and I went to shul like I was 18 years old, but you know, my year in yeshiva, to Europe on the way home, and they didn't say Aleinu. I didn't know what was going on. Like, why don't they say Aleinu here? Like, you know, but of course I didn't know what it's all about. So I assume they don't, but I don't know, unless maybe the rabbi learns for 10 minutes and maybe they do. I don't know. I haven't gone. If somebody, next time you go, let me know. Okay.
One last comment, Rabbi Kelman. I just have to say this. We're waiting for you to come to Brooklyn. At least I am.
Okay. So I used to go to Brooklyn. I must have spent 200 Shabbatot in Brooklyn in my life. Because when I was in YU, my uncle, you know, from Prospect Park, you know, founder of Prospect Park, my aunt lived in Brooklyn, my uncle lived in Brooklyn, I had about 5 first cousins in Brooklyn. So most weeks in YU, I was in Brooklyn, many weeks. And then I lived, after I graduated from YU, after I got smich, I worked as an accountant in New York for 2.5 years, living on East 19th Street, which is in L&M. So I spent many, 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 many Shabbatot in Brooklyn. And for the first time, when I was there, I rented in a house with two friends. We rented a house. And so for the first 15 weeks, we went to different shuls till we found the shul that we liked. You know, I went to all the different shuls, you know, to try them out, a bunch of shuls. But anyway, so I don't know where you live in Brooklyn, but yeah, I haven't been to Brooklyn for a while for Shabbos. But anyways, okay. All right. Now it's almost like anticlimactic, but okay. Emet v'yatzi v'nachon. So last week we spoke about the 15 adjectives, whatever. We spoke about, is it talking about all of the above? It's talking about God, Hashem Okecha Emet. God is true and yatziv and right and proper and yashar. Is it talking about the mida of truth? Hashem Okecha Emet. Pause. Emet, truth is nice and good and great and beloved and etc. Is it talking about the Exodus from Egypt, right? The Bar Hazeh, right? That's the unclarity. So it's really all beautiful. We said it, in a certain sense, it's all of them. Now, it's hard to say every single adjective. You have to figure out how they apply to each one of them. I've seen nobody who does this. Somebody, Art Rose said this affirmation, I guess the affirmation of faith that God took us out. I said it could also be connected to the bracha before Shema. This is the bracha after Shema. So God's love, Ava Rabba, Habocher Bamo Yisrael B'Ava. God shows with love. That's true, and it's God's love. So there are many, many different ways to interpret these ideas. So last week we spoke on Yashar, the idea that being a Yashar, the mitzvot between man and man. I just want to go over some of the other adjectives and just point out a few other ideas. We have Emet v'Yatziv, right? It's established, Nachon, it's correct. God, Exodus, all these things, truth, it's correct. Nachon, Kayam, it's permanent. This theme of permanence, the whole bracha, we'll come to it. The idea that it's forever, from before till afterwards. You notice the whole bracha, as we'll point out. But this idea of Kayam, that it's established sort of for all time. Yashar, we spoke about that last week. Straight. Straight is our relationship to other human beings. I did, somebody asked me before, I sent it to you. I should have set up before and put it in the chat box, but I didn't. The introduction of the Netziv Tiberation, where he talked about Sefer Yashar, it is translated. It is in English. If you go on Safari, maybe after the class, if you want to stay in there, but he's interested, I'll look for it and then I'll post, but it is on Safari in English. The Netziv's introduction to Bereshit, this very powerful idea that Avram is the Yashar. Being a Yashar is much more important than being a Tzaddik. And Avram prayed for Sodom, even though it was the antithesis of what he stood for. And that's what a Jew does. We get along with people who we disagree with. We care for people. That's his whole point. That the Yaakov and Laban, the honesty Yaakov had in all his business dealings with Yava, with Laban, we are better than our people who are against us. I don't have to tell you. We don't do the same things. You know, on this concept, I probably mentioned by Hanukkah. It's a very beautiful idea I heard from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, the Rav's brother, says, Rabim biyad matim, okay, that's a big miracle, the few beat the many. But tmeim biyad torim, the pure beat the impure, zeidim biyad oskei tortecha, people who learn Torah beat the people who don't, who care, what does that have to do with anything? It's very nice, but that's no miracle about the war. If you say, I had no ammunition and we won anyway, well, what is this? So he said, because we don't fight the same way our enemies fight. We don't stoop to their loneliness. We don't hide behind our civilians and want more civilians to die so it looks good. We won't do the things that our enemies do. So that's harder. It's harder to win the war when you have a moral army. But anyway, so that's, but being a yeshar is to even with people we don't agree with. Ne'eman, trustworthy, ahuv v'chaviv. So I just want to talk about ahuv v'chaviv very, very briefly. So it's beloved, ahuv. So you can say God is beloved, the fact that we freed him, if you're talking about the Exodus. So freedom is beloved. You know, our relationship to God is beloved. And I think this is a very important thing. We have to love being Jewish. I don't know when I mentioned it recently, but, I think I mentioned it on my podcast on the Parsha this week, I think. Rav Moshe always used to bemoan the fact that people, I don't know Yiddish, it's fair to sign a Yid, it's hard to be Jewish. That was a terrible thing. People came from Europe and they complain how hard it is to be. It was hard, but they complained. So the kid says, I don't want this. I want to be in America where everything's easy. We want the easy life. So people don't want to relate to Judaism. That's hard. You say it's beautiful. It's beloved to be a Jew. We have to love mitzvot. And I mentioned a number of times, which I love to mention the introduction of the Egle Tal. The Egle Tal was the Sukkot Shavuot Rebbe, Rav Avram Bornstein. He wrote the Tshuvot Avnei Nezer. It's one of the classics. I don't have to tell you. And you see, most Hasidic Rebbeim were not great Talmid Chachamim, which is fine. That wasn't their role. They were spiritual leaders. They weren't Poskim. So most of them, but you had exceptions. The first Lubavitcher Rebbe, of course, you had exceptions of great Hasidic Rebbeis who were great, great Torah scholars. But they are the minority. The Divrei Chaim, Rav Chaim Sanzer, you had different people. So the Avnei Nezer is one of the exceptions where he was the first-rate Torah giant. He wrote the important Tshuvot, the Avnei Nezer, and he wrote a very classic book that nobody learns anymore. But when I was in Yeshiva, we learned it a little bit, the Egle Tal on Hilchot Shabbos. And he goes through the 39 Melachot, Melacha by Melacha. So in his introduction, the Egle Tal talks about the joy when you learn Torah, the Simcha. Some people say, you know, the Hasidim are into happiness and kiddush and fun and food and dancing and singing. The Mishnagdim didn't like that. They're very, you know, subdued. The Yekkes are like that too, a little bit. Don't have that fervor, you know. So he says, so some people say if you do mitzvah because you love it, that takes away. It's not lishma. It's not for the sake of God, because I enjoy it. Oh, why do I go to shul? I like it. I learn Torah because it's enjoyable. Not because it's mitzvah, so people will say, that's not lishma, because you're not doing it, because if I didn't like it, I wouldn't do it as much, because I like it, so you're not really doing it for the sake of God. So he said, no, that's a huge mistake. That's a huge mistake. When you do a mitzvah because you love it, you learn to, that's the ideal of lishma, that the, I'm doing for the sake, because it's so beautiful, that's why I do it. So it's a very important that we have to teach people to love Judaism. It should never be a burden. And if we feel things, listen, it's sometimes inconvenient, of course, and we're human beings, and, you know, we don't always like to get up in the morning and, you know, go to Minyan and whatever and 50 other things, or not to talk Lashon Hara or be honest in business. It's not always easy, but it's very, very beautiful and very beloved. And that's what Ahuv v'chaviv. So I think that's both our relationship unto God, it's Vahuv, you have to love God. We just said Shema, Bapta, right? But we have to love all the, we have to love Judaism and love mitzvot and love our relationship to God, the Chaviv, Nechmad, Naim. Nechmad is, how do you translate Nechmad? Also beautiful, but no, it's more, what's a better translation of Nechmad? How do they translate it here? Beautiful, good.
Pleasing, pleasant, maybe?
Naim is pleasant. So that's another thing. So Nechmad is beloved, I think, also the same idea. I mean, beloved, delightful. Or maybe that's a good word. I think that's how Koran is. Yeah. It says beloved, that's Ahuv, Chabib, is, you know, cherished. Delightful is Nechmad. I'm reading from the Koran here.
And art scroll says pleasant. Desirable.
Desirable, right. Everybody translates differently because every translation is a commentary. But they say desirable for Nechmad, right. Oh, you know where they're getting that from? Where's Art School getting that from? I just thought now, I think. Why is Art School translating Nechmad as desirable? Because when's the first time Nechmad is written in the Torah? By Chava. No. In Gan Eden. Yes. What's the pasuk? Nechmad. I'm right. Somebody look up a pasuk, please.
And,
I'm sorry.
Nechmad.
Right, so that's, I'm sure that's where they're getting from. Desirable. Chava desired. It's beautiful. I think it's a beautiful way. Last night, Rabbi Glass mentioned this is a very common thing that it's a known thing that when you're not sure what a word means, the best place to look is the first time it appears in Tanakh. And that now, often words will have multiple meanings, but if you want to get the root, the most important meaning, look at the first time. So I don't know, but I imagine whoever translated Art Scroll was getting that from Nechmad, from Gan Eden. I think that's a beautiful thing. Here in Koran, it's delightful. It's a slightly different idea. But okay, it's Nechmad. We definitely in Hebrew. Naim. And Naim is pleasant. Their Torah is to be pleasant. That's another thing. And the Gemara uses this in a lot of instances. This is another one of these, what I were talking about earlier, this meta halachic concepts. That, in other words, you can't issue a ruling that's like, not pleasant for people. Torah should be enjoyable. The rabbi's job is to make Torah easier on people. Throughout history until our generation, because it's so easy to be religious for the first time in a long time, throughout history, the great poskim were all mekilim. You know, people who study Psak Halacha know what makes one a great posek, as Ramosha Feinstein famously he said in his interview with the New York Times, they asked Ramosha, how did you become, like, why does everybody turn to you in America? He says he doesn't know. All he knows is that somebody asked him a question and they must have liked the answer because the next day somebody else asked a question. And, you know, another person asked, people started asking questions. Why do people ask certain rabbi questions? Because they like their answers. And then there was, you understand, what makes a posek, he has to be accepted by the people. What makes a posek accepted? You like what he has to say. They're great poskim. It's not who's the smartest, the greatest Torah scholar. Obviously, you have the great Torah scholars, but you ask shilas to somebody. It's not like, oh, you know the answer. It's not that you pick, you know, what people do. That's also terrible. They know they want to keep one day yontif when they go to Israel. So, and they know which rabbis say one day yontif and 2 days. So they ask that rabbi one day. That's ridiculous. You have to have, I mean, maybe the thing is most people, they find we keep one day. That's the general psak today, at least in the modern Orthodox world. Most people today who go to Israel, I think, keep one day, and there's a lot of bases. It's changed. Rav Shekler told us that too. It changed. It used to be when I was in yeshiva, I kept a day and a half. The last couple of times there, I kept one day. You know, 2 days, things evolve. You know, psak halacha evolved. But you have to have a consistent rabbi, regular rabbis who ask. But people go to rabbis because they like their overall approach. That always used to be the way. So our great rabbis are all mekilim. They always look to help people. They don't look to be strict. And that's, Rav Moshe was like that. Rav Moshe, quote unquote, he was too mekil. That's why today some people don't like, you can drink non-Chalav Yisrael milk, and you can use artificial insemination, and you can do this, and you can do that, and you can, you know, you don't have to do heroic measures to save your life, you know, when you're in pain. Like, he's always looking for ways to make it easier for people. You know, you can ask a non-Jew to do this. Rav Moshe, fascinating. I know I'm thinking that, says you can have a non-Jew turn on the heat on Shabbos, that's in the Shulchan Aruch. But Rav Moshe said you can't ask a non-Jew to turn the air conditioning. So I don't think people would follow that today. I wouldn't follow that today. In other words, today, not having air conditioning in the summer is just as dangerous. We know people die from heat exposure every year in the summer. Hundreds of people die. And there's heat waves. There was a heat wave in Canada a few years ago. How many people in British Columbia? 500 people died, like, in a week. So, you know, the assumption is to be heating is really important. Air conditioning is not so important. Okay, but Moshe lived on the Lower East Side. I'm sure he never had air conditioning. I don't know. But today, but I'm saying the idea is you want to make life easier for people. But, okay, it's not naim, but the Torah is pleasant. And when people are not pleasant, you know, muravim habriyot, there's a problem. And that's why we say these things, norabba dir. So it's also awesome. And now this is the trick and the hard thing to do sometimes. How do you combine when you love something, you don't have that same, respect. You awesomeness, norava dir. Truth is powerful. God, the Exodus, freedom, all these ideas that could be we're talking about are should be awe-inspiring. Now, awe-inspiring implies a distance. When something is awesome, you're like, wow. You step back and you marvel. And that's how our relationship to God is. That's what Yirat Hashem means. Fear, it's not fear of God. That's, you know, pachad. But the mitzvah to be a Yirei Shamayim is not so much to be afraid of God. Maybe there's a little bit of an element to be afraid. We say it should be a Yirat Chet. Yirat Shamayim, Yirat Chet. Yeah, it's a little bit different though, right? So Yirat Shamayim is be in awe of heaven. It's very hard to have love and awe at the same time. And we mentioned, you know, so only by God. By God, there's a mitzvah of ahavta, and there's a mitzvah to be afraid. Our parents, we only have a mitzvah of awe at the and to honor. We don't have a mitzvah to love your parents. Because they don't go together. You only have a mitzvah to love your spouse. V'apta l'reicha kamocha, the Gemara, while it applies on a certain level to everybody, the Gemara in Suzmiacha is a spouse. The primary meaning of that pasuk is to love your spouse like you love yourself, which is actually possible. To love everybody like yourself is impossible, as all the Ramban and others point out. It's not really when you love everybody. That's ridiculous. Can't do that. So Ramban says it doesn't mean that. Obviously, the Torah can't mean that. So, but the Talmud thus interprets it meaning about a spouse. So that relationship is one of love, not of awe. That's the Netziv. You want another great Netziv. The Netziv says that was the problem in the marriage. I'm going to say like Apikorsis. Now, that was the problem in the marriage between Rivka and Yitzchak. Rivka was in awe of Yitzchak. Rivka grew up in Laban's house, you know, a little bit. She knew the ways of the world. Let's put it that way. And Yitzchak was willing to die on the altar for God. And that's why when Rivka first saw Yitzchak, she says in the Torah, she covered her face. She couldn't get close to him. He was too, wow, this man. And she fell off her camel. Like, you know, and she thought that was a problem because she couldn't communicate with Yitzchak. Why did they never talk about it? Your favorites, they're like totally, they're poles apart. And that, and as Rav Shishman Rafael Hirsch says in his commentary, that's why Esav turned out to be Esav. He said, Chanoch l'nar al pitarko. You have to teach each child differently. And the parents, Yitzchak and Rivka, made this tragic mistake of giving them, they sent him to the same yeshiva, you know, of Shem and Aver, whatever. They sent him to the same place. And that's terrible because Esav needed a different, he needed the school where they had sports for 2 hours a day. He needed a different school. than Yaakov. Yaakov is an Ishtam, Yeshev Olim. He can go to the yeshiva where they learn Talmud 10 hours a day. And Esav needed a modern place, you know, where they care. And from Shishon Versh, he says this. This is exactly what people, some people don't like this. But then he said, had they not done that, it would have, maybe Esav wouldn't have been Esav. And it's really, then it seems is saying that this, the same thing. There was awe. There, a husband and wife can't have awe of each other. They have to have love. So love and awe don't together. So here we are putting it together again. The same way you have Ava and Yirat Hashem. You have Ahuv. You have to, again, love Torah, love God means we have a close relationship. You know, when you're in love, you can, you know, and therefore you can do certain things. You know, you wouldn't do to a stranger. You know, you understand each other. You know, it's okay, God. You have to have this love and closeness, but you have to have this awesomeness. Norah v'adir. After both of those. Okay. Umetukan, umekubal. It's, mitukan. It's, takan. It's fixed. It's prepared. It's prepared for us. So I also think this also, what we're saying here is whether it's Torah, the Torah is prepared for us, but we have to implement it. God, if it's God, God prepared a world for us, but we have to conquer the world. We have to establish the world. Everything is there. It's mitukan, but we have to go the next step, and we have to sort of put that what was set up for us. God prepared it for us, but He's not gonna give it to us. You know, you set it up, but then we have to do it. That's mitukan, mikubal. We accept. We accept truth. Let's say it's truth. We accept God. We accept Torah. We accept love. It has to be something mikubal. Upon us that we willingly accept, like Naseh v'Nishma, in a certain sense, force mitzvot don't mean anything. You can't force anybody to, that is already meaningless. People have to observe the Torah because they willingly want to observe the Torah. Forcing people doesn't really work. And, we know that. That's human nature. We don't like to be forced. Yes, of course, the Torah tells us to do things, but that's not the same as forcing. One, we have to do things mikubal, the tov v'yafeh, we spoke about last week, it's beautiful and nice. And, even the tov, you know, I think it's, I'm not, you know, I haven't, I'm not expert enough in Rav Shmuel Bal Hirsch. I know many of his writings, but, I'm pretty sure his overall view of mitzvot, the way he looked at mitzvot was very much as many people did, mitzvot are good for us. It's good for our society. The reason we have mitzvot is to make our lives better, to develop our character, and to develop our society, to make a better society. Like, that's it's good. All of this is very good. Torah is good. God is good. The love of God is good. The Exodus is good. Redemption, our relationship to God. It's very good and nice and beautiful. This is sort of unlike the approach of Shinshon of Yeshaya Leibowitz. You know, anybody, if you're familiar with the approach of Yeshayahu Leibowitz. So, Yeshayahu Leibowitz, basically, that's Nechama Leibowitz's brother. So he, believed that we keep mitzvot because we're in God's army. And when a commander tells you to do something, you do it. You don't ask any questions. And if God were to tell you to stand there in your head, we would stand there in our head. And he gives us an example. A person comes back, Rahman al-Islam, from burying a parent. They have to daven immediately. The same way, okay, before the funeral, not, but right after the funeral, they have to daven. Just like a person comes back from the wedding of his child. It's the same davening. The Torah doesn't take any of the Torah doesn't care. The Torah is all about we are like our machines. We have to just follow whatever God says. Needless to say, this approach is not, even though he tries to back it up, this approach is not really, maybe some aspects, but I don't think this is an accepted approach. And I don't think it's an approach that works for people. But Yeshayahu Leibowitz had a lot of interesting approaches. But the general approach is the mitzvot do have, I don't say an ulterior motive, ulterior purpose, but it's not just to follow the will of God. It's to create what's good for man. God said it was good. God said it was good. Everything's good, right? So it has to be good and beautiful. Yafeh, nice. Okay. And then I'll just quickly point out, I see it's already getting late. And then we say, so I mentioned before, and we'll just end with this, and we'll pick up on this, please God, next week, the idea of the permanence. We're going to talk now about all this was true, is true, will be true, like, hayah hoveh v'yeyeh. So you see right away, is Hadavar Aleinu Le'olam Va'ed, forever. Elohe Olam, God, you're the eternal, permanent God. The door by door from generation to generation. Emunato Kayem La'ad Kayem. If you go through, when you say Shema tomorrow, when you say this tomorrow morning, just look how many times it talks about La'ad, forever, Olam, prior generations, future generations, over and over, that theme comes up. So that, please God, maybe you can pick up on that next week. I'll go through it, hopefully get to the end and discuss why, what I call this year, from redemption to prayer, the idea of why Geula has to lead to Tefillah, and there are different, I've said a number of times, as we're getting close, Tefillah is really only Shmon Esrei. Everything we've done up to this point is either praising God, Sheva, giving thanks to God. It's not tefillah. We've thrown in a few little things. Please, God, do this. But it's not tefillah. Shema is not a tefillah. It's an affirmation of faith. This is not tefillah. We're talking about gula. You have to go from gula to tefillah. You have to prepare yourself. But then we get to tefillah. So hopefully we'll pick up on that idea, the linkage of verb. But just quickly to review, I have to talk about Breuers for half an hour. But the idea that you have to follow the minhagim of the place that you are, you go to, and that's both to be strict and to be lenient, and you should never try to outshow the rabbi. It's disrespectful. You want to go to the rabbi, maybe the rabbi doesn't mind. I agree. You could have a type of shul where the shul encourages everybody to do their own thing. Also beautiful. But, generally speaking, you walk into shul and everybody's sort of one thing. So maybe you could argue it's not right of me not to wear a black hat throughout the whole building. Maybe. I don't know. I guess I don't think so. How far you go, I don't know. And they didn't mind. No, they didn't say, you know, had they asked me to put a black hat on for all of done that, I would have done it because I'm in the shul. That's not what they asked me. They just said, when you have an aliyah, okay, when you have an aliyah, do it. Okay, so we discussed when to say aleinu, if there's a break, when not to say aleinu. When was the break on Yom Kippur? The break used to be after mincha, which is why there's no aleinu after musaf. And I forget who just mentioned that in their shul. Taka do say aleinu after musaf because they do have the break then. And we talk about, you know, falling bears mean hagim, and it's important to be more concerned with your non-religious people. That's exactly what Sefer HaYashar is all about, the Book of the Straight. That Rav Shachter said, go to your non-religious relative's wedding. That's more important than go to your religious family. And then we just finished up some of the points in these 15 adjectives. It's really 60, but it's emet and 15. Hashem Elokeichem, that's really how it ends. We add the word emet, as we spoke with the Shema, and then we have 15 adjectives. Either, as we discussed, might be describing Emmet, describing God, describing the Exodus, describing the love of God, redemption, etc. And then we've gone through that. So we spent the last week, this week, going over with sort of just these ideas, Yashar, Neman, Beloved, Achiv, pleasant, or pleasant, has to be beloved. You should love to do mitzvot, but you can't take away from the awesomeness, and things are prepared for us. We just have to do it, and that's all very nice. It's tov yafeh. Okay. Let me has any questions, comment. Let me just go back to the beginning. It's hard. The sun is shining here where I am. Yeah, basic respect. Boys who learn in the Hesed Yeshiva and visit boys in the mirror, they should come wearing black jersey and black hat. So that's an interesting question. I know not here. When you go visit the mirror, I don't know how much you have to go, but yes, you, to a certain extent, absolutely. When you're going to visit, my son was in Gush, so he was in I forget his name, Shir, and they used to take the boys once a year to Bubov. That's what they did. I know he was close to, no, Bells. Bells is a big shul. And they went, they took them to Bells for Shabbos, and they met with the Rebbe. So I don't know what they did differently. They understand. Bells welcomed them. It was planned in advance. They didn't just walk in. You know, they planned it. And they want to expose the kids. It's very good to see other shuls, how other people daven. It's very good for Achdut and Abbat Yisrael to see that, you know, the way they do it in your shul, that's not the only place in the world. But the boys, when they learn, so I don't know that they have to wear a black hat necessarily, and they probably don't mind. But yes, if they really, really, if it's going to create a machloka, yeah, they should. And when the guys from the mirror come to visit Gush, they should take off their black hats, right? So I think it's nice that we can have both, that it's okay to wear a black hat. Like, I didn't use the example of not wearing a black hat. I used the example of caring, not caring. Certainly that's really more like you're saying, oh, rabbi, you're not religious. You're like a machal shabbos because you carry. That's different than putting on a black hat. You understand? They're not the same. Where exactly you draw the line, I don't know. You have to think about it. Use common sense. Discuss with people. See what the nature of the shul is. Discuss with the rabbi. But yes, at some point, at something you have to do with what they do in the mirror. When the mirror do is the mirror, when in gush do is the gush. Okay. Let's see here. Rav Soloveitchik wore a black hat. Yes, of course. Rav Soloveitchik often wore a hat. A lot of people, I was in YU this week, they had this learning program on Monday, and they're, it's a different place. I was talking to a couple of the Rebbe. I know a number of the Rebbe in YU. Some of them, a number of them, of course, are younger than I. I'm from Rav Schechter. I went, of course, said hello to him, had a nice conversation, but it's not like some of the other Rebbe I can be friends with, you know, I can schmooze them. The YU base mentors looks different. A lot of white shirts. More hats than there used to was when I was there. Okay, whatever.
By Kelman, I didn't write that he wore a black hat. I wrote he deliberately changed his blue hat for a black one when he went
to the instead of his regular blue. Yeah. Okay.
And he told his shamish when in
he
Rome.
Probably didn't change his socks, though. I think the Rav always wore like this, whatever. I don't know what.
White socks because his wife, when she got older, couldn't tell the difference between the navy and the black. So to make it easier for her.
Right. And the rabbi was a little like, I don't say absent-minded, but, you know, a little bit like, you know, it's whatever. He was in the world of learning at, okay. I know it's the Spanish Portuguese. I assume S&P, I assume is the Spanish Portuguese. Had an Ashkenazi head. Yes. Where's his tallest stubbins like an Ashkenazi? So that's very interesting. I know who you're talking about. Obviously, he's the rabbi in Spanish Portuguese shul, but, I find that very interesting. I davened there once, the Spanish Portuguese shul on a Friday night. I'd like to go back again at some point. I assume the shul approved. They wouldn't hire a rabbi, but that's very interesting. Is that right? What they do? Okay. I don't know what to say. Any hat will do at Breuer's. Okay, by the way, the chazan doesn't wear a black hat. He wears like it's like in the conservative shul. Like they wears, it's not like a hat. It's I don't know what to call it. It's like a big kippah. It's like they put on. It's soft. Like you can flatten it. Like it's anyways. It's just interesting. Different. Listen, I think in Breuer's they wore clerical robes in Frankfurt. They don't do it today. In Germany, I think Shimshon Frau Hirsch, as far as I know, wore clerical robes, you know, like the black long robes and all. That was a bit, people didn't like that. It was like church and reform and, you know, all that. Today, they don't wear it so much, even in the reform. And I don't know what they do in the churches. Yeah, as delightful for enough, but okay. Oh, your archival has delightful also. Very interesting, not desirable. That's interesting. Okay, thank you. Yeah. I guess different people translated the difference you're doing for us. Well, I don't know. Shabbat shalom from Elazar. Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Kochta Tera Adif, yes. Thank you, Yocheved, for that. The Gemara in Beitza says it's the strength. It's better to any Joe, that's any idiot, anybody can say it's forbidden. It takes Kochta Tera, the strength to allow something is much better. That's how traditional halacha was. Today we've turned things upside down. It's Purim, Banafoku. So Purim Katan. Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, everybody. Thank you very much. Have a Shabbat Shalom.
Purim. Rabbi Kelman.
Yes.
Hi, Rabbi Kelman. It's Judy Sokolow. I sent you an email. I'm wondering.
Yes. I don't know if anybody noticed. I'm for the first time.
You're not home.
A school Shabbaton. So I'm actually. I'm on a campground. So I will call you. Please, God, thank you for the message. I've just been a little bit, you know.
Yeah, technical. Okay. Do you have any idea when? Because I'm not always home.
Hopefully within the hour. If it's not,
that would be perfect. Weekend,
let me know. I'll try.
Okay, that's perfect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Boy, everything. Okay, everybody, be well. Have a Shabbat Shalom and look forward to learning with you and invite a friend as always. And we should hear good news. B'sorot Tovot. We should have much to celebrate.
Amen.
Pouring cut on everything.
Thank you.
Everything. Okay, have a good
Shabbat.
Okay, good Shabbos, Marty. Okay, be well, everybody. Okay.
Shabbos.
Today I'm in the school minion, also a different minion, a little bit different. So, actually where, you know, as you know, those who are here, so I teach in Shabbos, I often spoke. So on this, on Shabbos, which I haven't been before, actually, it's for grade 12, whatever, a lot of my classes, my students. So, they have two minyanim. They have a traditional minyan with the mechitzah, and then they have an egalitarian minyan. They're doing it as a a partnership minyan. Okay, that's, you know, Chad, it's a community school. So this morning, the, you know, whatever, it's, that's, anyways, it's also, there's something to be said for that. You're dealing with non-observant kids. That's already a much broader discussion. I know I'm, you know, but I'm saying it's, you know, Chad provides these, all these kids who are not Orthodox, who come, whose parents spend a lot of money to get their kids a Jewish education. And, you know, they don't go to Orthodox shuls, many of them, but they come to shuls. Very nice. Okay. Just pointing that out as a aside. Anyways. Okay. But everybody be well. Shabbat shalom. And thank you very much. Bye bye.
Thank you. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.